30-23-5818. Lance Corporal Adam Page, volunteered, mobilized once to Cyprus, up Toral, returned home safely. 30-18-2619, Sergeant Victoria Gilmartin, volunteered, mobilized once Sierra Leone, up Gritrock, stood down, returned home safely. Whiskey 105-4843, Sergeant Flo Robertson, volunteered, mobilized once, Afghanistan, op Herrick, returned home safely. These are my friends, Army reservists from various regiments, all volunteering to deploy on British operations, all trained soldiers and willing to go where they are needed, all sat at home now safely with their families by the side. 65824, Private Walter France, Machine Gun Corps, died Monday, the 8th of October, 1917, at the Battle for Passchendaele, aged 20. He was conscripted. 16955, Private Thomas Lawrence Ash, Devonshire Regiment, died Friday, the 7th of July, at the Battle of the Somme, 1916, aged 26. He volunteered. 640197, Gunner Samuel Fulton, Royal Field Artillery, died Saturday the 20th of October 1917 at the Battle for Passchendaele, aged 22. He was conscripted. 100 years have passed since these brave young men picked up their rifles and boldly charged into battle. They left behind their friends, their families, their homes and their jobs. Why? Because they were told they were needed, that they had a job to do. Nothing more and nothing less. No lengthy debate or discussion. Just pick up your rifle and follow me. Why did they go? Because they knew they were needed, and they knew that they had a job to do. They also knew that they may not come home. We have just lived through two of the most confusing and challenging years of my life. Many have experienced loss, struggled with mental health, felt lonely and afraid. We have seen death tolls as a country higher than anything in decades. Through all of this, though, as a country, as a general populace, we were not asked to stand up and fight. No, that was saved for a select few, working within the NHS, emergency services, and other key roles. No, instead, we were simply asked to stay indoors, a concept that in the grand scheme of things appears fairly mundane. Trucks did not pull into our villages, loading 18-year-old boys in and giving them a rifle. Families were not scrambling into the underground in the depth of night to avoid being shelled. Children were not removed from their families, placed on trains and sent to live with strangers. No, we were asked to stay indoors. What a frightful concept. 24 months later, we see the remnants of the virus in the form of surgical face masks, working from home and social distancing. But other than that, we have as good as gone back to normal. It often appears as good as forgotten. There are no towns and cities destroyed, no ration books to be seen, no empty houses where entire generations have been lost. And yet when the virus peaked, many thought this was the end. I've heard numerous people compare the coronavirus pandemic to that of the world wars. Well, how dare you? Whilst some may be able to loosely draw parallels through personal loss or sacrifice, the two could not be further apart. As many move on with little but a glance back at 2020 and simply forget how awful things were a mere 18 months ago, how harrowing must the memories of the world wars be that over 100 years later, we still stop every year and we remember. The two simply cannot be compared. Earlier this year, an international emergency was announced as Allied troops pulled out of Afghanistan after a turbulent 20-year campaign. Within days, there were calls for humanitarian organisations to step in and help the 600,000 displaced Afghan nationals. To put in context, during World War I, 7.5 million people were displaced, and a further 16 million after World War II. These figures are not to nullify what happened in Afghanistan this year, but instead simply to demonstrate the magnitude of what happened 100 years ago. During the cry from Afghanistan, many chose to turn their heads to the crisis, referring to them as terrorists and blaming these innocent men, women and children for a number of atrocities that have happened around the world. While some turned their backs, others helped them load onto crowded planes to flee the violence. Others sent money. Thousands from around the UK signed up to house them. We had a choice. How did we view them? How could we deal with the situation? What did you choose? As we tried to comprehend the unfathomable loss of life from 1914 to 1918, and then again from 1939 to 1945, I wonder how you ever begin to re-establish the sense of normality. How can you simply move on from what has happened? How do you ever rebuild lives, hope, security, faith, unity, and morale? I'm reminded of the wise and encouraging words of Lucius Senca, the Roman philosopher. Perhaps the worst will happen. Perhaps not. But until then, look forward to better things. A few weeks ago, I watched the film 1917, which if you haven't seen it, I would strongly recommend that you do. It follows a young man through the trenches, tasked with delivering a message to the front line. Over a number of days, travel, and various tribulations, he eventually delivers the message. A message that, in turn, will stop the slaughter of thousands of British and Allied soldiers. Do they give him a medal, stop and appreciate what he's been through, or even take a moment to thank him? No. He is just the smallest cog in the most enormous machine. But what did he do? He did his job. He stood up and fought. He stood up and he pressed on while the odds seemed increasingly stacked against him. I do not know what he did before the war, but like many around him, I can be pretty certain that he was not a soldier. His hand may well have been forced. He may not have had a choice, but he was there to do a job. In a day in which we do have a choice, I encourage you to stop and to think. Choose to be kind. Choose to forgive. Choose to open your homes as well as opening your hearts. When preparing for this morning, I struggled to find many of the words that I really wanted to say, so I've decided to use someone else's. J.R. Tolkien wrote this from Lord of the Rings. "I wish it need not happened in my lifetime," said Frodo. "Well, so do I," said Gandalf. "And so do all those that live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us." 30902679. Sergeant Nathan Brown of the mighty 243rd stood before you now, live and well, willing to go wherever is needed, protected by God and covered by grace, choosing to go, choosing to stand up for what is right, and choosing to love. As we stand together now and partake in a 2-minute silence, we stop and we choose to remember. Thank you.
Wow, a powerful morning. Actually, quite tricky to come and just follow that with actually what I've got prepared. What I've got prepared really does connect very well with what Nathan shared. And actually that song, All Things New, really also spoke to me about how God wants to do something different, how he wants to make us feel about our future. And I am going to do what I've prepared, but I just want to put a bit of an overlay on that so you can sort of think about it as you go, because that's what God's been talking to me about through the meeting. And one of the words was about being displaced, and being displaced from home, and I will get to it in this, but actually soldiers being displaced from home, and also how that made them feel, and refugees being displaced from home and how they might feel. And where do you find your refuge? So if in your head, if you can imagine a battlefield in World War I, you can imagine soldiers hunkering down and taking refuge. And in the pandemic, we sort of took refuge, didn't we, in our homes. But I guess what God has challenged me is about when is it time to come out of that refuge? Where do you take refuge? When do you stop hunkering down? When do you start moving out? And I think that's a challenge for us where we are right now, because home has become a very different place. And some people might be very happy in hunkering down in their home. Other people may not be at all. And some people might need to come out of their homes because actually they've quite enjoyed just hunkering down. Right. That was a pre-bit. So today and this morning, we're particularly gathering to remember those who fought on our behalf. Not only remembering those who lost their lives, but also those who've been injured or traumatised in active duty within the armed forces. And of course, that stretches for us. Remembrance stretches really for us from sort of First World War on. So it's not just about the First World War and the Second World War. We know that our soldiers and our military personnel are involved in all sorts of activity, and we remember all of through all that time. But I think we do fix on the First World War because it was just awful in its level of sacrifice. So I'm going to read a poem from the First World War. The poem is by Rupert Brooke. If I should die, think only this of me, that there's some corner of a foreign field that is forever England. There shall be in that rich earth a richer dust concealed, a dust whom earth England bore, shaped, made aware, gave once her flowers to love, her ways to roam, a body of England's, breathing English air, washed by the rivers, blessed by suns of home. And think this heart, all evil shed away, a pulse in the eternal mind, no less gives somewhere back the thoughts by England given, her sights and sounds, dreams happy as her day, and laughter, learnt of friends, and gentleness in hearts at peace under an English heaven. And now, I like that poem because I think it really does encapsulate how many young men felt in the First World War. They were incredibly young, and they are not like we are now, much travelled. They very much were at home in an England which is long gone. And sorry, I'm not making a point about a national thing here, but that was their context. So you sort of get that poem and you think, what a wrench it would have been for those young men to go away, many of which didn't return. Rupert Brooke, for instance, didn't return. And it made me think about, well, what makes home? So I'm not going to answer that question, but I'm going to leave that question with you. So just imagine I was going to ask you directly, which I'm not going to do. I'd frighten the life out of you. I said, but what is home? What makes home? What do you refer to as home? Is home a physical place? Is it where you live? Is it a village or a town? Is it a city? Is it a country? What makes that your home? If you look over the previous year, I guess the most notable military action which Nathan referenced was the pulling out of Afghanistan. And what I thought that brought into sharp relief for me was not only the plight of those military personnel leaving Afghanistan, but also those refugees, the number of people, Afghanis, that wanted to leave their country as well, needed to leave, some of them successfully, some of them weren't successful. And I think that was just, an awful thing to watch through the news, wasn't it? And sometimes we can watch this stuff and sometimes we can't watch this stuff, but some of the scenes at the airport were harrowing, people desperate to leave, needing to leave. It reminded me that often in these military conflicts, and Nathan referenced some statistics, it's not only the military personnel that suffer and civilian casualties, but there is often a significant displacement of people we call refugees. And the world is a place of conflict, and many of these tensions are deep-rooted. If you just take our own, you know, focus around the Bible and the Arabs and the Israelis, would be a good example of a deep-rooted tension which we perhaps could never see being resolved. But there are other tensions within the world which are just, you know, just go back as far. And even within our own domestic setting, with some tongue-in-cheek, you know, sometimes we do bristle around our United Kingdom. So particularly with the rugby's on at the moment, we will have fun with our Scottish, Welsh and Irish friends. But you know, there is underneath all of that, there is a bit of a tension. We are not as joined up as we imagine we are. And, you know, the Bible gives us no indication that these times will abate. You know, really, peace for us is something that we look forward to after Jesus' second coming. That's when we will experience true peace. And thanks to Dave Summerhill, a Facebook post, I watched an interview on BBC Breakfast with Captain Tom Moore again, where he made that point very eloquently, that actually what the world's need is love. There's too much hate in the world. But I have to stand here and think, I can't see that changing. And I guess the point is that, you know, soldiers, conflicts, refugees, regrettably, are part of our context. So, some up-to-dated statistics on refugees, which I have to say, when I looked into it, really did surprise me. So the number of displaced people, and you can be displaced you know, as a refugee for a number of reasons. It's not just conflict, it can be about persecution, it can be natural disasters, it can be human rights violations, etc. But in 2020, 82 million people were displaced. Not all outside of their country. Some of those were internally displaced. About 26 million were externally replaced from their country. But 82 million is about 1% of the world's population. We thought, oh, 1%, it's only 1%. You're thinking, wow, 1% of the world's population. If you think about countries where things don't happen and people don't move around, 82 million is a lot of people. 26 million people displaced outside those countries. And those countries you'd recognise. So two-thirds of that group come from Syria, Venezuela, Afghanistan. We've talked about South Sudan and Myanmar. And these stateless people have been denied their home. They lack access to what we consider to be the basic rights of education, healthcare, employment, freedom of movement. Refugees are effectively people, children, families that have been displaced from their homes, many on a permanent basis, and require sanctuary and hope, possibility that they can start again. Often with limited possessions, estranged from family, support networks, may be unwelcome in their adopted country. And we might use the term refugees or aliens or confuse them with migrants. And despite the small number of refugees that are taken into this country, there is no doubt in some quarters an undercurrent of xenophobia associated with refugees. So, you know, I was really taken by Nathan's word about being open and loving and kind. We should be kind to refugees. So what does the Bible say about refugees? All right, me spouting off, but what does the Bible say? So if we looked up Leviticus 19, verses 33 and 34, and this is where God is, if you like, forming the law for the children of Israel. It's how he wants them to live. When a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall not wrong him. The stranger who resides with you shall be to you as one of your own citizens. You shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. That's a great verse, isn't it? Because it makes it really clear. Because the children of Israel were once refugees. They went to Egypt because of a famine. But God's intention is very clear. They should be to you as one of your citizens. You should love him as yourself. Which of course reminds us of Mark 12, 28 verse 31. Where it says, one of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating, this is talking about Jesus, that Jesus had given them a good answer. He asked them, of all the commandments, which is the most important? The most important one, answered Jesus, is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this, love your neighbour as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. So I don't think there's any contention that it is God's intent for our responsibility towards refugees is to treat them as our neighbours and love them as we love ourselves. So what does the Bible say about home? So let's look at Isaiah 32, verse 18. My people will live in peaceful dwelling places. We'll just hang on to that line for a minute for the Penskers. My people shall live in peaceful dwelling places, in secure homes and in undisturbed places of rest. Doesn't that sound great? And that's what we want for home, isn't it? That's what God wants home to be like. God understands our need and our desire for a peaceful dwelling place, secure and a place of undisturbed rest. Or a shed. Something like that. Picture it in your minds. But in Psalms 91, verses 1 to 2, it says, whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High shall rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Let me read that again. Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. So what if God is your home? So what if God is your home? John 14, verses 1 and 2. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If it were not so, would I have not told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? So we've got this picture, haven't we, of that where God really does understand what we want from a home. And yet he's pointing us to the fact that we have a heavenly home. And that's what we should be thinking about. That is where we should seek our refuge. And I'll read one last verse, only because it's important in the sense of understanding Jesus' understanding of home. So in Luke 9, verse 58, and Jesus said to them, foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. So we know in the way that Jesus lived his life, and it's an exemplary life for us, isn't it? We know sometimes we can't get anywhere close to it. But Jesus experienced an earthly life with no real earthly home. He just went where God wanted him to, because he was looking forward to a heavenly home. And that's our exemplar, isn't it? That's our standard, is that actually we shouldn't be so attached to our earthly home, because we have a heavenly home, and that is where we should seek our refuge. I can only imagine, and I am grateful that I can only imagine, the plight of refugees who, through fear of conflict, famine or other disaster, have to flee, often with only what they can carry, with no certain future. It is very easy for us to blank out foreign news. But these people are like you and me, and they are loved by God, and we need to remember them. And in thinking about military personnel, that displacement of home is also very real, perhaps particularly through the First and Second World Wars, when people were less travelled and they were so young. So that sacrifice we remembered this morning is heightened. Look, not only did many of them lose their lives or were wounded, this was done in foreign fields, skies and seas. And I do hope that many took refuge in their faith. But we will remember them. So just to leave you with three thoughts. Let us continue to remember, honour and respect those that have given their lives and service for their country and ours and other freedoms. Let us remember those refugees and be generous in deed and in spirit towards those who find themselves in a foreign land. And let's challenge ourselves not to be so comfortable or hunkered down in our own earthly home that we lose sight of our heavenly home. Thank you.